and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hurts, and tonight we're going to break down all 12 Week 11 matchups from this Sunday. Fun slate of games. Wasn't exactly, you know, the best-looking slate going into it, but I think we ended up having a good amount of fun throughout the Sunday slate. Unfortunately, got some injuries, but we'll be going over all that. I've taken the time throughout the day to watch all these games, either live or on NFL Game Pass, condensed after the fact. Tried to make notes that, you know, you won't be necessarily catching in the box score, tracking injuries and what that means moving forward, and also just kind of recapping the matchups with some cool stats along the way. So thank you, as always, for tuning into the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And without further ado, let's get after it, people. Game number one, we had the Browns defeat the Eagles 22-17. The Cleveland Browns are now sitting at 7-3, and life is good. With that said, they aren't 7-3 because of their quarterback, Baker Mayfield. It was another game where, you know, we saw a few good strikes when he is able to go back there, stay in rhythm, put his foot in the ground, you know, make the first throw that's available to him. The guy looks great, and that's one of the reasons why he had one of the better rookie seasons we've really seen at the position ever. But, you know, other than a few nice strikes, took a Darryl Hodge, one to Rashard Higgins, that was about it. I mean, ended up with only 204 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, 12-22. Again, not awful. He was making some big plays down the field, but just not the sort of thing we're looking for in fantasy land. I mean, he's honestly just like a less efficient version of Kirk Cousins. They're running the Vikings offense in Cleveland with Kevin Stefanski as their guy, and we're just not getting a rushing floor. We're usually not getting enough pass attempts to provide a passing ceiling other than the occasional, you know, 5-touchdown, 300-yard plus explosion or whatever he had against the Bengals a couple weeks ago. These are going to be what we're going to be getting more weeks than that. So, you know, throughout this whole year, we've kind of been on this anti-Baker train in terms of fantasy. That's not going to change moving forward despite the Browns' success. On the Eagles' side of the ball, Carson Wentz, man, the cries for Jalen Hurts have just gotten louder and louder. Peterson did come out after this game and say that, no, Wentz is still the quarterback for next week and of the future. So shout out to ESPN's Bill Barnwell. He brought up a really good point about Wentz. Seems like every single one of his interceptions is like someone tapped the A button instead of pressing it. We saw that in this one. Absolutely brutal pick six, trying to lob it out into the flat. It looked like he might have gotten hit as he threw it, which kind of accentuated the just ugliness of the overall pass, but either way, that was bad, and then he capped off the game. They weren't going to probably be able to come back anyway, but he threw an ugly pick intended for Alshon Jeffrey, who couldn't get off the line, and to be honest, I thought that play, you know, Wentz trying to force it to Jeffrey and just lobbing it over his head for Denzel Ward to pick, kind of, you know, helped show the entire Eagles season in one play. You know, guys that we've seen play better, not playing better, making a dumb mistake, and ultimately just not providing anything close to what we were going to see. So, you know, Wentz, as I kind of talked about in my quarterback ranks article last week, the really big problem with him lately in fantasy land, even if he does kind of end up getting things going a little bit better with these weapons, he's just not running right now. And we saw that again in this game. 3 carries, only 10 yards. For a while, I mean, it was like this dude was really trying to make up for a whole season of disappointments in every single chance he got, going off script. But at least, you know, over these past 2 weeks with Rager, Goddard, and all these guys back in action, have not seen that dual threat side of him. Looking at these backfields for a second. So it was, again, you know, just RB1s all around in Cleveland. I mean, Kareem Hunt played 52% snaps, 14 carries, one target, but Nick Chubb was still in the lead, 46% snaps, 20 carries. I mean, leading overall touches with zero targets. This was Chubb's game. I mean, he had 114 rushing yards, including a 54-yard jaunt where he had a nasty stiff arm. Also had a hurdle. I mean, truly, I'm probably going to put together a highlight vid before, I mean, just of this game before too long, because Chubb was one of the more impressive games, I think, of the season from a single runner. Kareem Hunt only had 11 yards on his 13 carries, and again, he only had the one target as well, so definitely wasn't a game where he put together many yards, but he did find his way into the end zone by, you guessed it, jumping over a guy. So both Browns running backs managed to jump over other humans in this game that were trying to prevent them from doing so. Absolutely wild. I'm sorry, but like the hurdle to me is just like the biggest FU best evasion tactic possible. I even think it's better, you know, than trucking someone, spinning, whatever you want to do. If you jump over someone, you know, we'll look past your 21 total yards otherwise and give you an A for the day. On the Eagles side of the ball, Miles Sanders, 62% snaps, 16 carries, 5 targets. Boston Scott, a little more than we've seen in the past, 38% snaps, 5 carries, 3 targets. I do think if you take away the last couple garbage time drives of the game, it would have been Sanders more in that 70-75% role, but you know, this is kind of what he gets. He's the feature back, but we just never quite see those Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, you know, 25-30 touch games. They seem pretty content to get him to around 15 or 20 and kind of go from there. So look, he was fine out there, average 4.1 yards per carry. Lost the fumble early on in the rain. That wasn't ideal, but I mean, it wasn't a situation that I think we could blame Miles all that much. I mean, the Eagles, whenever they're running these screens, just look so hard. Everything in the Eagles offense had looked so hard all season. Miles Sanders hasn't really been excluded from that other than some big runs against the Ravens and Steelers earlier this year. So Miles, you know, someone that I had ranked as number 4 overall running back last week. Going to have to take a little bit of a step back. I thought against this, you know, Myles Garrett-less Browns defense, he can get going. But on the Seagulls offense, really nothing is a given these days. Looking at these wide receivers, mentioned before in the Browns, I mean, only guys that really got going, Kadarius Hodge with 73 yards, Higgins with 65 yards. But when no one on your team is going to have more than 5 targets, it's going to be hard to do much. At least in Minnesota, you know, Kirk Cousins, he's feeding those guys fantasy-friendly downfield targets, and they're just really talented wide receivers. But in Cleveland, even someone like Jarvis Landry, it's going to be tough to, you know, fire up any of these wide receivers as realistic top 36 options moving forward. With the Eagles, Dallas Goedert was able to get a late game touchdown. Good to see for those of us that have been ranking him as a top 5 tight end. We will continue to do so. It was, again, not fluky. He scored, but it wasn't garbage time. We did see Richard Rodgers score before that, but make no mistake about it. I mean, Goddard is the undisputed number 1 tight end in Philly as long as Zach Ertz is out, and I think we can continue to go back to the well with him as a high upside tight end 1. Jalen Reagor was the only other guy with over 50 receiving yards, and, you know, he only had 5 targets. So these situations are crowded. Travis Fulgham caught just 1 of 7 targets. But, you know, as soon as Wentz starts to kind of look like he's up to no good, and hey, what are you doing back there, Carson? Usually he does throw the ball in Fulgham's direction. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Alshon still isn't significantly involved. You would like to think as his passing game clicks at some point that you know, Goddard, Fulgham, and Reagor could be, you know, somewhat fantasy relevant assets. But here we are, you know, going into week 12, everybody, and we're pretty much still like, you know, when can Wentz and company take a step forward? So schedule doesn't get all that much easier moving forward. It's just, you know, realizing that we, even though we are talking about the first place Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East, got to realize that this is just a lower floor offense than I think any of us could have imagined going into the year. So for each matchup, I do want to bring up, you know, a PFF Lily stat. And for those that don't know, PFF Lily is my 25-pound wiener dog. She is really bad at picking football games, but I enjoy her company, so I like to give her a little shout out with this. So our PFF Lily stat of the matchup is that since 2018, there have been 71 players with at least 150 rush attempts. Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry are the only players averaging at least 4 yards after contact per attempt. And Nick Chubb is at 4.1 yards. Derrick Henry exactly at 4. And also, again, just among those 71 players, Nick Chubb has PFF's highest rushing grade since entering the league. I mean, I think they came out. Look, I just joined PFF in July, but I'm pretty sure my lovely employer came out in the summer or spring saying that Chubb was just the best running back in the league with the ball in his hands. He has certainly looked that way when healthy in 2020. Next matchup, we got the Titans and the Ravens. Titans took down the defending AFC North champs again, 32-24, 30 versus 24 points. A little bit confusing there. My bad, everybody. With this Titans offense, it was chippy from the start. I mean, we had, I think it was Malcolm Butler, maybe, barking with Harbaugh before the game. A.J. Brown was out there. It was one of the smaller cornerbacks, but you know what? They talked that ish, and they went out, and they backed it up. Credit to Ryan Tannehill for largely playing great again. Didn't seem like he was forcing it downfield quite as often, but, you know, 22 for 31, 259 yards, pair of scores, threw one really ill-advised pick early, but that was really the only big mistake he made. Only took 2 sacks on a performance. We all know the Ravens are, you know, one of the more tougher defenses to play against. So the fact he was able to go for over 250 yards, multiple scores, and chip in 35 yards on the ground, awesome floor game for those that, you know, were willing to stick to him. And honestly, it wasn't really, I mean, his fault. He could have had a bigger performance. A.J. Brown, you know, we'll get to him in a second, but he had a couple drops early on that weren't helping. And I just think that, you know, more times than not, we will see Tannehill have even better efficiency than he had out there on Sunday. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, it was a rough one, everybody. 17 for 29, 186 yards, touchdown, a pick. Did chip in 51 rushing yards, but had Marquise Brown for a potential 30-plus yard touchdown, just missed him. Had Mark Andrews for a potential touchdown inside the red zone. Was able to get Andrews one later, but just more missed opportunities. And I'm not trying to say Lamar went out there the whole game and didn't make some great throws. He truly did. I mean, the touchdown to Andrews from 31 yards out was absolutely beautiful. Kind of adjusted them, throwing it over the correct shoulder to lead him away from the defender. Like, great stuff. Had another one down the middle to Andrews that just showed some great touch. I mean, he can make all the throws on the field. It's not even a matter of that. It's just how consistently can he make them, which I understand. Massive part about playing quarterback. But, you know, as we've kind of preached all year on here, I mean, just remember to take a look at Lamar Jackson, you know, not just as himself, but as his whole offense. I mean, one of the stats I talked about on our Sunday morning show with the Ravens this year that Lamar Jackson, going in this game, had the exact same average time to release as he did in 2019, 2.76 seconds. But this year, at least going to Sunday, he was under pressure on 36.9% of his dropbacks, just 30.9% in 2019. So they're not keeping him as clean, even though he's largely been the same guy in terms of getting the ball out on time. He hasn't been quite as prolific as a rusher, and we just haven't really seen much help. I mean, look, Dez Bryant was out there running around. I love Dez more than anybody, but the fact that Ravens just weren't able to add anybody to his receiving crew throughout the entire offseason, I think that's the biggest problem, more so than any just regression from Lamar Jackson as a true passer. Good news out of the Ravens backfield, though. It looks like J.K. Dobbins has been freed, everybody. 63% snaps, 15 carries, 2 targets. We had Gus Edwards down 21%, 3 carries, no targets. Justice Hill played 11% snaps, and Mark Ingram sitting down there at 8% with just 2 carries. They pretty much gave Ingram his start, 2 carries, 2 yards, and got the old dog out of there. It looks like the J.K. Dobbins show, and as it should be. I mean, look, all season long, Dobbins has been the superior Ravens back. They've been treating him as the lead pass down back recently, but this was the first time that we really saw them brush aside Gus Edwards, brush aside Mark Ingram, and let their guy go. And just realizing, I know this was a 14-10 game in favor of the Ravens at halftime, and then it was 21-13 by the end of the third quarter. I mean, look, the Titans made it interesting in the fourth and ultimately won it. They did more than make it interesting, but Dobbins, you know, was the lead back in a game that wasn't just straight up negative game script. It's similar to when DeAndre Swift took over last week. Unfortunately, the concussion thing prevented an encore, but, you know, we've seen pass down backs at times have these big games when game script just goes perfectly. This game script really didn't go as well as we would have ideally wanted it to for Dobbins. He still managed to break out anyway. So it's about time. And Ravens are a smart organization. I think we all figured this would happen at some point. It does seem like it has happened now. So J.K. Dobbins with this sort of role, he's going to be a weekly top 20 option at the position. And I think it's going to be hard to keep him out of the top 15 once it comes time to make the ranks. With the Titans, yeah, what more can you say about the big dog, Derrick Henry? Walk off, 29-yard touchdown to ice the game, 28 carries, 133 yards. Actually played 79% of the Titans snaps. Usually he's someone that we see more in that 50-60% range, and we're annoyed. Still only had 2 targets, but it was a step in the right direction after he really wasn't getting fed anything in the passing game in recent weeks. So we still saw Jeremy McNichols out there for a few snaps. Deontay Foreman had 1 carry, but look, it's the Derrick Henry backfield. We know this. Winter is coming. Expect more and more big performances from Derrick Henry moving forward. Love watching that guy play. Quickly with these passing games, yeah, Mark Andrews, great game. Caught 5 of his team high, 7 targets for 96 yards and a score without Boyle, and just without this passing game really having anyone else to turn to. Continue to treat him as the number 3 tight end in fantasy behind only Kelce and Darren Waller as long as George Kittle remains sidelined. Yeah, Dez Bryant, 4 catches, 28 yards. Look, Dez is not on the fantasy radar. I get it, but I just love this guy in terms of just the competitor he's been, some of the big plays he made for the Cowboys over the years, and just the fact that he was able to come back from that Achilles, come back from, you know, an injury that has ended many a career over the years. I'm just happy Dez got out there on the field, got a catch. I mean, we're able to unironically say that Dez caught it once again. Marquise Brown, unfortunately, had the goose egg. Mentioned before, you know, he had the overthrow on Lamar Jackson. I will say, you know, that's happened a lot this year. I had a, you know, video go semi-viral on Twitter of about 5 overthrows to Marquise Brown from earlier in the season that could have been touchdowns. But I will say in recent weeks, I mean, other than the throw today, you know, it has been a little bit tougher to blame Lamar on this. Marquise Brown did drop a pass that hit him in the chest, and it would have been good for about 15 yards. So again, Lamar hasn't played perfect, but his teammates haven't been making this job as easy as we saw in 2019 as well. Now for the main event, everybody, the Titans wide receiver room. Credit Corey Davis catching 5 of 7 targets for 113 yards, but enough of that. A.J. Brown had the biggest beast mode freaking play, arguably, of the season. I mean, it was a situation where 3rd and 10, they needed a play. They were down, you know, trying to just tie the game up or just get ahead in the fourth quarter. Tannehill throws about 5-6 yard in route to A.J. Brown, breaks no less than 3 tackles as he pushes his way into the end zone somehow. Absolutely incredible play from A.J. Brown. This was coming after, I mean, he only had 1 catch, I think, by the beginning of the fourth quarter. He broke tackles on all 4 of his catches, like truly, or okay, not the last one, he was going out of bounds, but first 3 catches, breaking tackles, looking like the beast, looking like the guy that I hype up every single time I'm talking to you about the Titans, and, you know, ultimately was able to find his way into the end zone. So, you know, much more roller coaster of a game than it was to watch live, and if you just peep the final box score at the end. But, you know, another week, and I don't know if he'll finish as a top 12 wide receiver per se, but you guys can clearly see why we continue to go on the AGB wide receiver one train. I was talking to Evan Silva, you know, awesome guy, ever established a run, probably the GOAT in the fantasy football industry right now, just last week. And I, you know, okay, I had a couple glasses of sheesh. I was feeling a nice little buzz. And I just asked Evan, I was like, can A.J. Brown be like the best wide receiver in the NFL within 3 years? And Evan's response was that he's Terrell Owens. Love that comp. Love AJ Brown. We will see what more this special player has ahead. Of course, our PFF Lilly matchup stat is about AJ Brown. So look, since 2019, here are the leaders. Most forced missed tackles on receptions, not including carries, just receptions. AJ Brown with 30, Alvin Kamara with 30. They're tied for first, everyone. We got Austin Eckler at 28, Kareem Hunt 28, Christian McCaffrey 28. But AJ freaking Brown has been the hardest guy in the league to bring down after the catch over these past 2 years. And then bonus note from PFF Steve, AJ Brown forced 7 missed tackles against the Ravens. That is the most in a game from a wide receiver, and just I think in terms of just receiving since Odell Beckham Jr. in week 16 of 2016. So truly seeing special stuff from AJ Brown week in and week out, even when things don't come as easily as we would prefer. Next matchup, we got the Texans defeating the Patriots 27-20. This was a fun game. You know, Cam Newton and company, they've come a long way from just being, you know, truly an unwatchable offense for certain stretches of the season. So it's been good to see that, even if this result didn't go the way they wanted to. But, you know, give all the credit in the world to Deshaun Watson. I thought it was probably the best game of the season for him. I mean, there was just so much off-script goodness again and again and again. The, you know, Patriots weren't even able to sack Watson once. I mean, he's usually a guy that we see take a good amount of sacks almost every single week, similar to Russell Wilson. I mean, he's taking the sacks because he's trying to make something spectacular happen, and a good amount of the time he does make something spectacular happen. So, you know, it's a willing negative you're okay taking because of the overwhelming positive that we can also get from that situation of him trying to extend the play. So no turnovers, no sacks, absolutely brilliant. This was with Stephon Gilmore back for the Patriots. So, you know, at the end of the day, Watson had 344 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, also chipped in 36 yards and another score on the ground, and he had a touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks nullified on a penalty. That was another fantastic throw. So truly, I mean, this was just one of those games. As I'm rewatching these games, I'm always kind of taking notes of specific plays I think might look cool in all 22. Watson had a freaking laundry list of those this week, man. I mean, he was just going out there, you know, making one or two guys miss and just finding his receivers afterwards. So ended up seeing, you know, more than a few guys get involved, and, you know, brought up the stat, you know, on past episodes, but the biggest difference in this Deshaun Watson in 2020 versus in the past with DeAndre Hopkins, he's just getting the ball out quicker to his first read. I mean, he has talented guys around him, and not that he hasn't still been great after not throwing to his first read, but I just think the more that a quarterback is able to both, you know, defeat a defense, you know, in under 2.5 seconds and over 2.5 seconds, those are usually the kind of time frames that PFF uses to judge this sort of stuff. Obviously, the better when you can impact the defense just as strongly in both ways, and that's what Deshaun Watson has done throughout the 2020 season. With Cam Newton, he made a number of nice downfield throws as well. His stat line's a little bit inflated. I mean, 365 passing yards and a score because Ryan Izzo caught a 50-yard Hail Mary at the end of the game that was unfortunately short of the end zone. But still, I mean, you take away that 50 yards and we're still talking 315 yards through the air from Cam. Again, in a passing game that we just didn't even know if they could consistently move the ball a couple weeks ago. So it was a Demir Bird game. And, you know, it's good that we actually have a couple receivers stepping up a little bit. But honestly, with Cam, it's just so tough right now. I mean, this Patriots team truly, I think, has, you know, anyone's idea of a bottom 10 roster in the league just in terms of pure talent. Not on them. It's just, you know, they had a bunch of opt-outs. They've been playing at such a high level. I don't think they've had, you know, the high-end draft picks, the high-end draft success that, you know, anyone has been hoping for. And because of that, we have this roster. So Patriots, you know, 4-6. But just remember, you know, I think other than that 49ers game, they've pretty much been in almost every single loss they've had this year. So, hey, NFL is a very competitive league. I understand we can, you know, play hindsight doctor and go through a lot of these teams. But truly, the Patriots, I mean, you think about, okay, they got blown out by the Chiefs too, but that was without Cam. But, you know, you go back to that Seahawks game, the Bills fumble, the Broncos game where Cam was, you know, one throw away from being inside the 10. And this one where, okay, you know, it was a Hail Mary. I'm not saying that was, you know, a very likely play to happen, but just realize, you know, Patriots are not quite as bad as that 4-6 record might be indicating. Looking at these backfields, so with the Patriots, Rex Burkhead suffered a knee injury, and because of that, we saw James White really lead the way, 58%. Snap rate for him on the evening, five carries, 7 targets. Damon Harris led the way, 38% snaps, 11 carries, 2 targets. The biggest takeaway was that Sony Michel was actually a healthy scratch, but I wonder if Rex Burkhead's going to be out, if they're just going to bring back Sony. So, you know, with this, thinking it was James White, Damon Harris, and Rex, that was great news for Damon Harris. I mean, I pivoted, you know, to Harris in like almost all my DFS lineups after hearing that news, because this was just the perfect matchup to really envision him going, you know, for 20 plus carries. Didn't quite work out that way. You know, Texans were able to build, you know, a big bigger early lead, I think, than most, including myself, expected from him. But either way, I mean, Damon Harris and positive game script. As long as Sony is inactive, he's going to be, you know, on that RB2 borderline, depending on the matchup. The problem is, if Sony's going to come back, I mean, Sony's going to eat more into Damon Harris's rushing workload than he is James White's receiving workload. So James White, he's good either way. We've seen him return consistent RB2 value when Rex Burkhead has been sidelined over the years. If James White is available in your fantasy league, go get him, because the Patriots have already had enough issues throwing the ball. We've seen them keep Rex and James White still involved throughout that, but truly, Rex and James, if either the other misses time, the one that is healthy usually balls out, so don't be afraid to go back to well there. Duke Johnson train. Hit another bump, people. 77% snaps this week. You know, was a bit of a bump off his 94% rate from last week. 10 carries, 5 targets. Unfortunately, he had 15 rushing yards and 20 receiving yards. CJ ProSize, 3 carries, 2 targets. Yeah, I mean, he got shut the hell down. There's nothing good about it. Last week, I at least had a couple runs I can kind of point to as being good. But yeah, Duke couldn't do anything. CJ ProSize couldn't do anything. Texans run game other than Deshaun Watson couldn't do anything. And maybe that was just the focus of the Patriots, and that's why, you know, Watson and company were able to throw the ball through the air. But the problem with Duke, and we saw this with David throughout the first part of the season, is that even if they are kind of getting this steady workload, the Texans, as fantasy friendly of a quarterback as Deshaun Watson might be in terms of putting up points, he's got this kind of Josh Allen to him where he's throwing downfield, he's not really checking down, and he's also taking off, you know, around the goal line much more than we would want a quarterback to do. And we'd rather them, you know, throw the ball to the running back or hand it off to him. There was the play where Deshaun Watson scored his rushing touchdown, and you could see, and look, the quarterbacks have their progressions. I understand we can't just point to an open wide receiver every time, but you know, you saw Duke work the linebacker, get open in the flat. Deshaun looks elsewhere and goes makes a play. So I get it. You know, I'm bitter. Duke has not been playing well. I'm taking the L on this, everybody. You know, definitely going to be tough to rank him in the top 15, top 16 moving forward like I have. But Thanksgiving coming up, facing the Lions, it's going to be Duke for another week. I mean, this Lions defense going in this week was the single worst defense in the league in fantasy points per game. We just saw similarly disappointed running back Mike Davis get going against them in this game. More on him in a bit. So I will say, Duke Johnson, I'm going back to the RB2 well for another week, but I admit, you know, all my barking over the offseason about Duke being this awesome three-down RB that just hasn't been released, well, I'm not going to take away anything from him over the past few years. Certainly has not performed well at all in 2020. Quickly looking at these wide receivers with Houston, mentioned Brandon Cooks had that nullified touchdown, but 4 catches, 85 yards, no scores otherwise. Another great game. You look at Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller since Bill O'Brien has gotten fired. Fuller's found the end zone more often, but Cooks has honestly been more involved on a per reception, per yard basis. He's going to be in good matchups like he has ahead against the Lions. Brandon Cooks is going to be on that wide receiver 2 borderline. Will Fuller, though, it's always Will Fuller week. We know that. Started a little bit slow, but ended up with 6 catches, 480 yards. Also at tight end, Jordan Akins, 5 catches, 83 yards. So nobody else had over 30 yards. Randall Cobb actually suffered a toe injury. Kenny Still suffered a quad injury. So this is good. This could even condense things further around Cooks and Fuller moving forward. You know, Fuller's someone we've been ranking in the top 15 all season long. We're continuing to do so. And then, you know, for Cooks, he's someone that's been steadily rising, and I think we can treat with extra high confidence, you know, as long as Cobb and Stills are going to be banged up with the Patriots. Yeah, Demir Bird, 6 catches, 132 yards and a score, 42-yard bomb for a touchdown. That was a nice throw from Cam, and he showed some good ball tracking ability. I mean, we know Demir Bird can fly. It's just, can he do the other things that, you know, it takes to be a great wide receiver? Certainly looked better this week, and, you know, we've seen him make a couple better plays over the past few weeks, too. He had a nice yak play specifically last week that caught my attention, because other than that, it's just been the Jacoby Myers show. So he only had 3 targets in this one. You know, I think he was seeing a lot of Bradley Roby throughout the evenings or throughout the afternoon, so maybe that has something to do with it. But either way, you know, we were kind of getting around to him as a borderline wide receiver, too. And, you know, Cooks, I think moving forward, like, we should be looking to play someone like Cooks, even if Jacoby Myers might have a slightly higher, you know, per game target outlook. We got to realize that, you know, anyone attached to this Patriots passing game, while it's been looking better in recent weeks, we do have a low weekly floor no matter who you are, and that does include Jacoby Myers. PFF Lilly matchup stat of the game, because I'm a little bit bitter about Duke Johnson. Most forced missed tackles per rush since 2018 among 71 players with at least 150 rush attempts. In first place is Duke mother freaking Johnson at 0.25 forced missed tackles per rush. Josh Jacobs and Kareem Hunt are tied for 2 at 0.24. So look, Duke has not been good in 2020, people, but please trust me when I say, you know, when I'm out here touting someone and telling you to play someone, and, you know, I'm really not trying to blow hot air up to you. I'm trying to condense the information, learn from the information, take you know, good stats from the film that represent what the film is showing and go from there. So truly, Duke Johnson has been making all sorts of dudes miss for the better part of the last 3 years. The problem is that those 3 years I'm referencing haven't been quite as good over the past 2 weeks. Next game, we got the Steelers defeating the Jacksonville Jaguars. Just another smash spot for the Steelers here, 27-23. So good game from Pittsburgh. I mean, look, they continue to win, and we can say what we will about their offense not being as dominant as we prefer, and maybe their defense, you know, just having a few holes that a better opponent could take advantage of. I'm not sure if anyone's complaining about that as much, but, you know, win is a win is a win, and they have 10 of them and zero losses this year. So credit to Big Ben, you know, for really just airing it out again in a matchup that didn't even need it. I mean, Pittsburgh had a 17-3 lead at halftime, could have easily, you know, ridden James Conner more, who was averaging 6.8 yards per carry. Nope. Second straight week that Big Ben had 46 pass attempts and a pretty clear blowout win. We continue to see, you know, a low yards per attempt, a low average target depth. Big Ben, you know, has the lowest average target depth of his career, pretty much, unless he's throwing the Chase Claypool. That ball is not going further than 15 yards downfield more times than not. But as long as he's throwing this much, we have touchdown upside, which we've seen from him all season long, just racking up the multi-score games. And also, it's just good for the wide receivers. So, Ben, it's going to be a situation where we know there's no rushing floor. We know the upside isn't quite what it was in past years, but at this point, he's a borderline QB1 at worst, I think, in most matchups. On the Jaguars side of the ball, yeah, Jake Luton. I mean, this was an impossible spot. I mean, Gardner Minshew here, I don't think we could have expected much more, but, you know, whatever you want to call it, 16 for 37, 151 yards, no touchdowns, 4 interceptions. You know, if every single pick wasn't his fault, I mean, a good 2 or 3 of them were at a minimum. So I would put the majority of them on his shoulders. And yeah, this was just a rough one for Jaguars offense as a whole. Saw a couple of nice plays from James Robinson, but better just to forget this one. Luton's someone that we can hope will enable DJ Chark. He's continuing to treat DJ Chark as the, you know, the undisputed number one wide receiver in Jacksonville, and we saw that again today with 8 targets. But, you know, we got DJ Chark as that wide receiver one that in fantasy land is going to always kind of be around that top 18 to top 24 option depending on the matchup. And we got James RB1's son, who has been an RB1 all season long. In this game, even though, you know, it wasn't great for him, still had 19 total touches for 94 scoreless yards and was breaking some tackles all along the way. Again, this guy is legit good. So go back to James Robinson. Well, we're starting him regardless of the matchup. DJ Chark is someone else we can have confidence in, and that's all I'm talking about for the rest of this podcast about the Jacksonville Jaguars. With this Pittsburgh Steelers backfield, though, James Conner has 68% snaps, 13 carries, 3 targets. It's just been this way all year. I mean, Benny Snell had 7 carries. A lot of those were just kind of mop-up time. He did steal away the goal line touchdown, but, you know, don't let someone saying that, you know, Benny Snell, like, you look at this throughout the year and just Conner being hurt earlier in the season. Like, I just get mad sometimes when we see these inside the 5-yard line stats, and it's like someone, you know, someone will say that James Conner isn't the Steelers' like lead goal line back. Like, he's their lead back. When they get downside the 5-yard line, unless he's really tired, there's a stoppage of play, he's going to be getting those carries. It doesn't even make sense. Like, we know James Conner is this big body guy. Remember that freaking picture in the offseason of his back? Like, if it was a smaller scat back guy, okay, maybe we could talk ourselves into that. But, you know, just make sure you're looking at the disparity of these carries, because while Benny Snell does get some run down there, they don't mind him in short yards. He would be the preferred addition if Conner's go down, and I think he would, you know, be leading the team in just carries per week. But, you know, it's James Conner as the feature guy and run, pass, and goal line downs, you know, just more times than not. Just because Benny Snell might get a goal line carry here or there doesn't mean he is their goal line back all of a sudden. With these wide receivers, Deontay Johnson continues to make his name as the number one. 16 targets, caught 12 of them for 111 yards. Chase Claypool had a score and 59 yards in his 8 targets. Juju Smith-Schuster just had 4 catches for 19 yards and suffered a toe injury at the end of the game when he unfortunately stepped on a flag. So I guess the broadcast booth was saying that, you know, he could have returned if he needed to, but he was limping on the sideline. So as a guy that's, you know, been dealing with that knee injury all season long, he started to look healthier in recent weeks, but, you know, we've continued to treat him as really a number 3 wide receiver in this passing game, and this injury is not going to help matters there. So Deontay, we know he's the number one. He's going to be a top 15, top 16 wide receiver on a weekly basis. And Claypool, I mean, he's not getting as many targets as Deontay, but he is getting the most fantasy-friendly targets of this offense in the red zone, down the field. Chase Claypool is someone that I think as we see Juju maybe just shrink more and more as kind of the clear-cut number 3 receiver in this offense, Claypool is someone that's going to be start, you know, banging on the door weekly of that top 24, you know, wide receiver 2 range. Also, shout out Eric Ebron, 4 catches, 36 yards, and a score. He's playing out there almost every single time. You know, had a tight end position that has been, you know, more volatile than just about any other one in fantasy football this year and years past. You can do worse than having someone like Ebron, a talented pass catcher in this sort of offense. I've seen the, you know, little girl dropping the ball meme with Ebron over the years, but like Nelson Agholor, you know, you can improve. You're allowed to improve. You're allowed to get better. I think that's what we've seen from Eric Ebron in recent history. Okay, want to talk about our PFF Lilly stat of the matchup for this one, and it does involve Deontay Johnson. So he has 6 games this year, not impacted by any injury of some sort. In those games, he's gone 6 catches, 57 yards, 8 catches, 92 yards, and a score, 9 catches, 80 yards, and 2 scores, 6 catches, 77 yards, 6 catches, 116 yards, and a score, and most recently, 12 catches for 111 yards. At least 10 targets every single time. Deontay Johnson, while he's not, you know, the 2018 AB, the 2018 Juju situation we were hoping for, anyone's idea of an upside wide receiver too, that, you know, moving forward, it wouldn't be shocking at all if he does rank as a true fantasy wide receiver one down the stretch. Next matchup here, we had the Washington football team defeat the Cincinnati Bengals 20-9. Man, Joe Burrow, QB1 season is unfortunately over. He suffered a torn ACL in his left knee and will be done for the season. It sucks. And, you know, the Bengals, I think, deserve not credit, the opposite of credit for, I mean, their kind of strategy with Burrow this year. Going into this game, he led the league in dropbacks. We have seen all year long, you know, they faced the Chargers, the Steelers, the Ravens. When they faced a good pass rush, you know, it was so concerning, and we just couldn't see them keep Burrow upright. Now, there's a difference between, you know, a quarterback facing pressure because they can't identify the, you know, the reads, they can't set their offensive lineup for success, and, you know, they're just holding on the ball too long. Burrow was tied for the 11th quickest release time going into this week, so he was someone that, you know, if you just took the pressure rate of their, you know, if you looked at quarterbacks that had really, you know, high pressure rates but also low release times, like Burrow is like popping to the top of the list when you're trying to kind of, again, isolate how much of the pressure is on the offensive line, how much of it is on the quarterback. So for them to know this and just continuously not even try to run the ball, like, look, I understand it's 2020, we want to pass the ball more often, but the Bengals are 2-7-1. I don't think they ever dreamed of contending this year. Like, trying to keep your quarterback a little more upright, because it wasn't going to be on this hit. Who knows when it was going to be? Because earlier in the game, I mean, Burrow got absolutely killed by Chase Young trying to score at the goal line. It was a 4th and goal. He's a competitor. He was trying to go score. I mean, I'm not even saying Burrow, this is on him, like trying to take better care of himself. I mean, I think he has actually gotten better, or was getting better as the season went on, of, you know, knowing when to really try to create something off script and when to, you know, take your losses and just take the sack, because you're not going to be able to do anything against some of these defensive linemen. So it was just a situation all year where Burrow, I thought, made the most of his surrounding parts. But, you know, running A.J. Green's dusty stealth out there again and again, not even trying to get John Ross or Auden Tate going with this offense, like, they just never really seemed to change much from week one on. And it was Burrow, you know, week two or whatever, he threw 61 pass attempts against the Browns, and it just never changed. They just kept going back to the well with it and asking him to drop back, you know, almost every single time. And hey, you know, he made the most out of it, and particularly in fantasy land, we love that volume, and he was good enough to, you know, also give us a little rushing floor. So great overall rookie season, I think, from Burrow. He exceeded my expectations given the situation. Just disappointing that, you know, the Bengals couldn't do a little bit more to help their future franchise QB. Best of luck to Joe in his recovery from this injury. It will be the Ryan Finley show moving forward. And, I mean, look, this game was awful enough. You know, 3-for-10, 30 yards with a pick and 4 sacks. I mean, last year was just on another level of bad. If we want to talk about truly the single worst quarterback over the past 2 years, I do think it would have to be Ryan Finley, from both, you know, statistics and hashtag watch the film standard. Alex Smith, this was the Alex Smith that I think we were hoping to get, not the Washington football team was hoping to put under center once they made the move from Dwayne Haskins. His first 2 games, he was erratic. He was turning the ball over. He wasn't even trying to push the ball downfield. Again, last week, you know, we talked about that 4th and 13. That's when things seemed to flip a switch. He only threw the ball 25 times today, so we weren't going to see him, you know, racking up 50-plus pass attempts again. And last week, I mean, again, it wasn't like he was just completely shredding the Lions defense, you know, with pure efficiency or anything like that. But in this game, again, 17 for 25, 166 yards, touchdown, 1 interception. That was tipped the line of scrimmage. Can't really blame him for that. 2 sacks, but he only lost 5 yards on them. So, you know, took 2 deep shots to Terry McLaurin. Otherwise, calm, cool, collected game manager that did not, you know, make any mistakes to really hurt his team. So, hey, they're not going to be playing the Bengals every week. I don't expect the Washington football team to be competitive when they have to play some better teams. But at a minimum, Alex Smith has made this offense a functioning unit that can, you know, move up and down the field more times than not against middling defenses. So kudos to the 2020 comeback player of the year there. with these backfields. Everyone, Antonio Gibson outsnapped J.D. McKissic by one snap. So, you know, still a two-back backfield, and this was a game script where we would expect Antonio Gibson to lead the way with, you know, Washington being up for the majority of the second half in style. But, yeah, and Antonio Gibson continued to look great. 16 carries, 94 yards, and a score. Also chipped in one catch for 10 yards. And McKissic, we just didn't see the same sort of involvement as a receiver. Six carries, 43 yards, and only three catches for 26 yards on just four targets. We're talking about the most targeted player in football over the previous 2 weeks in J.D. McKissic, and that was not the case here. So, you know, I've had to throw up making my rankings over the past few weeks, putting McKissic one spot ahead of Gibson. That will be changing. You know, we got Gibson's just already high carry form. We've talked about this throughout the process. It was never like Gibson became this irrelevant fantasy asset. The reason for the frustration with McKissic all year long has been the reality that if Gibson had this sort of extra target share attached to his current workload, we would truly be talking about, you know, the DC version of CMC. He's got the coach, he had the quarterback. Now we just need that workload. So we'll see. You know, a full-on takeover isn't imminent by any stretch of the imagination, but 15 to 20, you know, touches for Gibson inside of an improving Washington football team offense, we will take that. Next up with the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving, Gibson's going to be, you know, in that higher end RB2 range. You do love to see it, everybody. With the Bengals, Giovanni Bernard, 56% snaps, 9 carries, 5 targets. Samaje Perine, 44% snaps, 5 carries, 1 target. This is a little puzzling. You know, this was a game where they were playing from behind, you know, and for most of the second half. So because of that, you know, you would have thought that Gio really would have dominated the snaps, but could have also just been kind of a, you know, last drive or two garbage time that we saw take Gio down from his usual, you know, 65, 70% mark. I actually talked to a Bengals beat writer, Tyler Dragon, over this past week, and you can catch me on Sirius XM Radio on their Fantasy Sports channel every 5 to 7 p.m., and usually we can get a beat writer on there. And I asked Tyler Dragon, and like, do you think as the Bengals become less competitive, could we see Perine or even Travion Williams kind of take control of this backfield? He said no. He said Giovanni Bernard will remain the lead back and just get spelled on early downs. So, you know, I was just thinking, veteran guy, they know what they have in Giovanni Bernard. Lost season, why continue to, you know, pound on these touches? Sounds like, you know, from our inner source, that will not be the case. So we'll see. I'm going to trust what the snap counts and stuff tell us over, you know, what one conversation is as the game goes on. But tentatively, even with Ryan Finley under center, like, we got to bump everyone in this offense down like a lot, but I think Giovanni Bernard is probably still going to be the highest floor guy just with, you know, these sort of touches and targets and his potential to get 15 to 20 of them per week. So he's still going to be a low-end RB2, but again, and you can't overstate how bad the loss of Joe Burrow is for the rest of this offense. Quickly on these wide receivers, Terry McLaurin, 5 catches, 84 yards on 7 targets. Get this guy more targets. Had a beautiful 42-yard catch with a defender draped over him. But yeah, I mean, come on. I believe going in this game, only Alvin Kamara had more yards after the catch than Terry. So this guy can truly win at all areas of the field. Great little leader, too. I think he is actually their captain already, second-year wide receiver. You know, not even someone that was picked on the first day. So awesome story from Terry McLaurin. Cam Sims, Steven Sims, Isaiah Wright. These guys have all flashed, you know, for a little bit over the past weeks, but they aren't going to, you know, hold just any sort of fantasy relevance in this run-first offense when they can be. With the Bengals, Tyler Boyd, big game, caught 9 of 11 targets for 85 yards. A.J. Green did score on a little pivot route, but, you know, you see this goal line pivot route, and usually there's at least some semblance of separation. But luckily for A.J. Green, he is a pretty big guy with that 6'4", you know, 220 frame, and Burrow is able to put it in the right spot. So they got the score, but, you know, caught 4 of 9 targets, certainly didn't look like someone that's all of a sudden taking a bigger step. T. Higgins only caught 3 of 10 targets for 26 yards. This remains a spread out offense, everybody, and this is, you know, problematic. I'd say Tyler Boyd is the one we can, you know, expect to still provide a pretty decent level of fantasy production, even with Ryan Finley there. But even then, that's tough. I think Boyd's going to be my number one guy moving forward, but it's going to be tough to have him in the top 30. Truly, Ryan Finley might be the worst quarterback in football at the moment. I'm not trying to be a dick. That's just what I've seen. I think what the stats have said over the past 2 years. PFF Lilly matchup stat for the football team in the Bengals. I got to give it to Joe Burrow. He managed to throw for 300-plus yards 5 times in just 10 starts. The only other rookie quarterbacks in NFL history to accomplish that feat: Andrew Luck, who had 6, and then Daniel Jones, Kyler Murray, and Justin Herbert, who had 5. So I understand these are all quarterbacks, you know, from the very recent history, and the game is evolving. But you know, Burrow, with all that volume, you know, maybe his efficiency stats weren't quite as crazy, but you got to give credit to someone that can move the offense up and down the field regardless of what's happened. Again, out of all these quarterbacks ever, we only have these 5 guys that have accomplished that feat. So credit to Burrow. Again, hope that recovery goes well. Next game, we had the Panthers defeating the Lions 20-0. Just an absolutely brutal game. I mean, you would think facing a backup quarterback in PJ Walker could, maybe light a fire under a team that was slowly but surely kind of crawling their way back into playoff contention, but that was not the case. So credit to PJ Walker on his first NFL win, 24 for 34, 258 yards, touchdown, pair of interceptions. Look, he had a 50-yard dime to DJ Moore down the sideline. He had a nice touchdown pass to an open Curtis Samuel, and he was just short to scoring on his own on a rush. So we saw, some of the athleticism from the XFL, just him able to move out of the pocket, and also just a big arm. He can make a lot of these throws downfield. With that said, we cannot overlook these interceptions, everybody. Two of them, both of them his fault, both of them pretty brutal, and both of them in the opponent's end zone. So they had two extra drives that could have been points, and he threw the ball, directly to the opposition on both occasions. So, hey, it was his first start. We couldn't expect him to be perfect, but this was also a pretty dream matchup, in terms of what the Lions were bringing as a defense. And I'm still concerned about him moving forward. It's going to be Teddy's job the second he comes back, but, just appreciate this moment, and we'll see what happens going forward, because he didn't give us anything on the ground, -2 rushing yards. And again, my biggest gripe with PJ, as someone that watched every single play of him in the XFL, he was 7th out of 8 quarterbacks in QB rating when throwing in fewer than 2.5 seconds in the XFL, and then he was by far the first when he was throwing in more. So what that tells me is, if someone that has struggled to, see the first read, to make that throw, but when things, become playground style ball, he's able to make a bunch of plays. But as we can see in this one, with some of these rushing numbers and just his lack of true, off-script goodness, it's a lot harder to get loose against true NFL, talent defensive linemen than it is against some of the XFLers or even the NFL preseason players of the world. So again, great win for PJ Walker, but similar to what we said about Tua and kind of like Alex Smith early on, we can be happy for a guy that they got the win and still realize that they are not going to be these high-end fantasy relevant assets moving forward. The season is in full swing and the action is still unfolding, so head over to DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, with so many storylines in both professional and collegiate sports. This is the time to check out all that DraftKings Sportsbook has to offer. If you haven't tried the app yet, head to the app store now, because you do not want to miss this, people. To celebrate Sunday's action, DraftKings is ensuring all new users are covered up to $100. That's right, you bet, they cover with risk-free Sunday betting. Additionally, this weekend there is plenty of action to get on, so head to the app now to start making it rain. On top of those great sign-up offers, DraftKings offers great odds boosts every Sunday to help you make it rain. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF when you sign up to get this can't miss offer. Again, DraftKings Sportsbook is insuring your Sunday bets up to $100. That's right, you bet and they cover up to $100 when you use promo code PFF during sign up. For a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So, must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Risk-free coverage paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Matthew Stafford really also falls in that pool as long as his team remains so banged up. Kenny Galladay was out again, Danny Amendola, and DeAndre Swift. And you know what? It seemed like the Lions just didn't even care, and they tried to run the same offense. So Stafford ended up taking 5 sacks. To his credit, he threw a 50-yard bomb for a touchdown to Marvin Jones on a flea flicker that was nullified on an illegal formation penalty. But the one thing I just couldn't help but think this entire game, why does this offense look the exact same when they're missing all their, parts? They had Kerryon Johnson running around like their scat back and just playing the DeAndre Swift role. Kerryon Johnson admitted to freaking reporters in August that he doesn't have the same ability to move his body as DeAndre Swift. You're literally, fitting square pegs into round holes all over the field, trying to use Quintez Cephas as a downfield threat. Marvin Hall's fine. He gets his big field stretching play, usually one per week or something, but when you just try to slide him in the 3 wide receiver set and expect nothing to change, it's a problem. I mean, TJ Hockenson and Marvin Jones were by far their best two options to throw the ball to, and the fact that they only combined for 13 targets, come on, it did not work at all, other than again the one flea flicker for a score, which was something I saw them do last year. So I just feel like this offense, they had a great game plan in 2019, and when things were healthy, and even in 2020 for a little bit, we've seen them play well, but Matthew Stafford. His five games this year without an average target depth over 10 yards have all come without Kenny Golladay. In past weeks, that was okay because we had Danny Amendola, we had DeAndre Swift. It made sense to not throw the ball as far downfield without Golladay out there. But you take away those underneath guys. I understand there's just not a lot to work with at this point, but this is a Panthers defense that, you know, should not be shutting out any team, let alone, you know, one led by Matt Stafford and a team that, you know, likes to pretend that they have some playoff, ambitions. So just a brutal performance all the way around from them. I mean, this run game combined for 40 yards on 17 carries. Kerryon Johnson led the way with 69% nice of the snaps, 6 carries, 4 targets, AP, 31% snaps, 7 carries, 1 target. I think that was more just due to game script probably than anything. Again, Kerryon was the guy they wanted, you know, on third downs. This is rough, though, everybody, and I know they're getting, you know, this Texans defense on Thanksgiving, and hey, maybe that's a situation that could boom someone back to the top. Hopefully that someone is DeAndre Swift and he's able to clear the concussion protocol by then, because the way Kerryon and AP were looking out there, not good. I would say, you know, gun to my head, I would go with AP, but, you know, check out the DFS breakdown. I'll have out later this week with my full thoughts on that. With the Panthers, Mike Davis was able to get a solid game going. He only caught 2 passes for 15 yards, but 64 rushing yards and a score, and also just looked really good breaking tackles all day long. So ultimately 73% of snaps, 19 carries, 2 targets. I think we would have even seen higher numbers if this game was a little bit closer down the stretch. As we said going in this one, as long as Christian McCaffrey is out, Mike Davis has the usage of a true RB1, continue to treat him as such, and just realize that those duds he had, again, they're pretty much more due to being in situations like the Lions were in this game. I mean, he just didn't have many plays to work with. That happens sometimes. Unfortunately, it happened in several straight weeks for Mike Davis, but, you know, don't forget, this is someone with true weekly overall RB1 upside in their range of outcomes. Looking at these wide receivers real quick, DJ Moore season, everybody. Caught 7 of 11 targets for 127 yards. Also chipped in a 21-yard rush. Like, he had that awesome 52-yard catch downfield, and he's been making good plays downfield. But the whole reason, like, that this year's been a little bit confusing for DJ Moore is, like, he's always been a guy that can go downfield, but his yak has been what's so insane. I mean, I think his rookie year, like, average of yards after the catch per reception is one of the highest marks in PFF's, like, database ever. I mean, he was truly coming out of college looking like one of the most electric guys with the ball in his hands. So for them to kind of give that, you know, just more underneath high volume role to Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore as the field stretcher, it was just kind of the opposite of what we've seen in past years. So as we've seen, you know, over more and more weeks, both DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson and even Curtis Samuel are more than capable of operating, you know, at all three levels of the field at a high level. But yeah, get DJ Moore some more screens. It's not illegal to give him a rush attempt a time or two. You just want to get the ball in this guy's hands. So we've seen, you know, more urgency to do that. It's, you know, certainly looks good that PJ Walker identified Moore as his number one target. He's still going to be a little bit more boomer busty, I think, than we'd like, but we got to give credit to these, you know, boomer bust type players, because it's almost, I feel like that's almost a bad connotation. At some point, there's a lot of players that can't boom at all, and DJ Moore, you know, even though he has been inconsistent, he has shown that high-end ability to put together these big performances. So, hey, I'm someone that I've had DJ Moore, you know, on multiple teams, and sometimes, you know, when you have these teams where you have 4 or 5 top 25 wide receivers, there's an odd man out, and that has been DJ Moore for me in recent weeks. But, you know, more and more, it's just, if you can find a place in the offense for this guy, get him in there, because even if the passing game, you know, with the quarterback shuffling isn't quite as consistent as we'd like, DJ Moore is anyone's idea of a great NFL receiver, and I think we have seen that whenever he's been given the opportunity this year. Credit Curtis Samuel, 8 catches, 70 yards, and a score. I mean, we talked about him, like, he's not going to be someone that's going to put this up every single week, but when he's getting some rush attempts too, and when he's just involved in offense that more times than not are doing good things through the air, we can, you know, continue to treat Curtis Samuel as really, you know, a top 36, the legit wide receiver 3 option on a weekly basis. Robbie Anderson still hasn't scored since week 1, I believe, but another 9 targets, 7 catches, 46 yards. He has settled in nicely as kind of, you know, a low ceiling wide receiver 2 in this offense. With the Lions, again, mentioned Marvin Jones had that 50-yard flea flicker overturned, had 51 yards otherwise. He continues to look all right without Golladay. He'll continue to kind of be a higher end wide receiver 3, borderline 2, as long as he remains sidelined. Also, shout out TJ Hawkinson, playing through the pain with that toe injury. 4 catches, 68 yards. Keep firing him up as a top 5, top 6 tight end in this freaking wacko year at the tight end position. PFF Lilly matchup stats. So, first of all, Christian McCaffrey has been a far better receiver than Mike Davis this year. Second of all, listen to this stat. Mike Davis in the year 2020 has a 77.1 PFF rushing grade. Christian McCaffrey is at 75.9. Mike Davis has averaged 0.27 forced missed tackles per rush. McCaffrey's at 0.19. Mike Davis has averaged 4 yards per carry. McCaffrey's at 3.8. Mike Davis has averaged 3.3 yards after contact per attempt. McCaffrey is all the way down at 2.6. We would all take Christian McCaffrey over Mike Davis. Let's put some respect on Mike Davis's name. McCaffrey can still be awesome, and we can love Mike Davis, and we don't have to just say running backs don't matter, because clearly, you know, I've seen all the messages and the apps of me about Duke Johnson. We all know running backs matter to an extent, particularly in fantasy football. Mike Davis has been playing some great ball all season long. The stats say he's been a better rusher than McCaffrey. I think that's, you know, in large part because defenses are focusing on him less than Christian McCaffrey. I'm not even saying he's a better runner than Christian McCaffrey, but the fact that he's in the same area code, in the same offense, when they both have, you know, ample opportunity throughout this season, put some respect on Mike Davis's name. I really hope that, you know, in 2021 and beyond, we continue to see him get plenty of chances to touch the ball on a weekly basis. Thank you, as always, for listening to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Everybody, we have six more matchups on the way. Next up, one of the main events, I would say co-main event, Saints-Falcons. Saints got the victory 24-9. Taysom Hill was the really star of Twitter on the day. I mean, everyone was just kind of coming at this guy. And look, he got the win. I will say, you know, Saints scoring 24 points, that tied a season low mark. I mean, I was thinking, like, could this be just the wild scenario where Sean Payton, who we know loves Taysom Hill, probably more than the guy's own mother at this point. And, you know, the only time I can think in the past of a team making this big of a quarterback switch, you know, just because of an injury, I guess there was, you know, Dak and Romo, which we saw Dak kind of add a different dimension to the offense, and just being that, you know, kind of rookie, they were just, he didn't mess up hardly the entire time Romo was out. And then we also had, you know, even further back when Alex Smith was on the 49ers still, when he got hurt and Kaepernick came in, and that was even more of a shorter thing that they really gave the reins to Kaepernick. So I guess my point is with both those, we saw more of a dual threat quarterback coming to the offense, kind of really just get their run game going at a different dimension that wasn't previously in the offense. And because of that, you can make the case that they kind of unlocked, you know, a new higher level to the offense that the, you know, incumbent QB didn't have. I don't think that's the case in New Orleans at all. I think Taysom Hill is a passer. The way they're using him is never going to be as good as Drew Brees, because who is as good as Drew Brees? And then when they're running him, like, why do we need Taysom Hill averaging four or five yards per carry when we have Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray capable of doing that exact same thing? So again, it was successful. They got the win. It just seems so forced because I don't see anything about his skill set that isn't, you know, capable of someone else taking on. You know, I know the expression, jack of all trades, master of none. I don't know that that's a great thing. I think, you know, we see in life and in football, if you have one really elite skill, that can carry you a long way. So, you know, Taysom Hill, hey, he went out there, and maybe you could say he's above average at everything, and because of that, you know, we saw his good performance. And I don't want to take too much away from him. 18 for 23, 233 yards. You know, we all made fun of that underthrow that was just 20 yards underthrown on, like, the 43-yard completion to Emmanuel Sanders. But he had another underthrown touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders that was nullified by penalty. So could have been an even bigger game. He did find his way into the end zone twice, 51 yards. You know, we talk about guys like Josh Allen forcing defenses to, you know, guard the entire, you know, width and length of the field for better and for worse. Taysom Hill falls in that category. So he's not an easy guy to game plan for by any stretch of the imagination. I guess my point with this would just be, don't start buying too much in this hype and thinking that the Saints, you know, could be better, you know, quote unquote, better off without Taysom Hill. I think, they could be better off with Taysom Hill, because I think the biggest issue with Hill in there, it gets us to our next point, Alvin Kamara becomes not an afterthought, but man, I don't know what else to call it. First game of Kamara's career without a single reception in this one. That is just unacceptable. Credit to Michael Thomas for catching 9 of 12 targets for 104 yards. But come on, everybody. We've seen Alvin Kamara this year. He has been the Saints' best offensive player by far. And I mean, hey, he had 13 carries, 45 yards in the score. But really, like, we want Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara getting pretty much the same opportunities on a per-week basis. We want Taysom Hill running the ball as many times as Alvin Kamara. That's my point with this. Like, let Drew Brees be the quarterback. Michael Thomas had a good game here. What, was 2019 Michael Thomas setting the freaking reception record not enough evidence that we can give this guy the benefit of the doubt when he's going to be healthy? I mean, we're talking about him like, oh, can he only produce with Taysom Hill now? The guy freaking had to face Carlton Davis in shadow coverage twice, and then had the game last week where he should have scored, but Jameis sailed him and Brees was hurt by halftime. So chill out on Michael Thomas. He just had over 100 yards with a, you know, a glorified tight end throwing him the football. Let's, you know, let's chill on the Mr. Slanty jokes. We've all heard them all, and if you say his name on Twitter, you know he'll be, you know, going out and maybe getting that block button. So Michael Thomas, great 2019. He's coming on now that I think he's a little bit healthier, and credit to him for making the best out of a, you know, not great situation I think we'd see a lot more guys struggle with. On the Falcons side of the ball, Matt Ryan, just a really rough game for him. 8 sacks, 2 picks, 19 for 37, 232 yards. One of the good things about Matt Ryan over the years, and I think one of the reasons why he does get a high level of respect, is he is, the furthest thing from a dink and dunk quarterback. We've consistently seen him, shredding it down the middle, deep down the sideline to Julio, Calvin Ridley, all these guys over the years. And just in this game, when the Saints were getting this sort of pass rush, wasn't able to do anything with it. So the run game, 14 carries, 52 yards, didn't help matters. And with Julio Jones really missing most of this one with a hamstring injury, yeah, it just wasn't going to be Matt Ryan's day. We've seen him struggle without Julio Jones in the lineup, and that was the case today. Quickly with these backfields, Brian Hill actually played 41% snaps. Gurley was at 39%. We have seen, though, when the Falcons get down that, they do just really rest Gurley more or less in the second half. They don't like him as much on passing downs as you might expect. And because of that, we see Hill and Edo kind of get more run in these situations. So Gurley was still leading the way in carries, and he even had the backfield with only 2 targets. So even though someone out there might be telling you, hey, Brian Hill led the way in snaps this week, takeover is imminent, we need to see more than this. I'm not saying Gurley has played great, but he hasn't played great the entire season, and they haven't made this change yet. Coming out of the bye, if it would have been something that they were more pressing in the first half of the game, maybe that'd be a different story, but really wasn't the case. And Gurley, hey, he's been a touchdown-dependent RB2 all season. The touchdowns don't come, we get a performance like this, but it's going to be hard to rank, more than 15, 16 guys ahead of him next week. This Falcons offense, less scoring potential without Julio Jones potentially, but still a unit that we should expect to find the end zone a couple times more weeks than not, and Gurley is usually the favorite to be that guy finding the end zone. With the Saints, kind of the usual system. Kamara didn't play as much as usual, but I think that was probably more because of game script. 52% snaps for him and 13 carries. Latavius Murray, 47%, 12 carries and 2 targets. So Latavius continuing to play well. I'm not taking anything away from him, but Alvin Kamara, it's Alvin Kamara. We can all agree Alvin Kamara should get fed the ball a lot more. How many times can I say his full name and not just one? Maybe Taysom Hill's whole kind of grand scheme is to get Kamara to finish with exactly 81 receptions for the 4th straight year. That would be one outcome out of this whole Taysom Hill experiment that would make me smile. If we can get Kamara down off his, massive pace to finish with exactly 81 receptions for the 4th straight year, I would be down with you and Taysom Hill, Mr. Sean Payton. So quickly, these wide receivers, Calvin Ridley, you give the guy 8+ targets and he's going to return you a big game. He did that again, 5 catches, 90 yards on 9 targets, had a 46-yard catch on the second play of the game. Looks healthier than ever. Continue to fire him up as the wide receiver one he's been all season. Russell Gage had 12 targets, 7 catches, 58 yards. Really the first time since the first couple weeks of the season that we saw him get featured like this. If we're talking like a one-game slate or something, okay, maybe we can throw him in there. But we've honestly seen Christian Blake and Zacchaeus, step up a little bit more without Julio. So we've seen them bump around a little bit. Check out my wide receiver cornerback matchups column that's always out on Thursday to kind of see more specific thoughts if Julio's going to end up missing time with his hamstring injury. I mentioned before Michael Thomas, 9 catches, 104 yards. And, yeah, also Emmanuel Sanders, 4 catches, 66 yards on 5 targets. So Manny, great job coming back and not underthrown ball from Taysom, and then had a touchdown where he pretty much mossed the guy. I shouldn't say moss. It was kind of like that Jerry Jeudy moss from a couple weeks ago where, he technically caught the ball over top of the defender, but it was also like, bro, how are you an NFL defender and you did not knock that thing to the ground? So, hey, credit to Manny Sanders. He's doing everything he could out there. Still think, with Taysom under center, clearly this is more of a run-first offense, and, Manny Sanders is going to be more of a boomer bust, even more of just, I would say, like kind of a low-ceiling wide receiver 4 here moving forward. PFF Lilly matchup stats. So backing up Michael Thomas here a little bit more. Michael Thomas in this game, 4 targets thrown at least 15 yards downfield. He caught all 4 of them for 73 yards. Before that, the rest of 2020, just 3 such targets, and he only caught 1 of them for 20 yards. So Taysom Hill, he's brought, a little more of a downfield mentality to the offense. Michael Thomas is one of these guys where you look at his downfield stats from the past few years, not all that impressive. I don't think it's that he can't do that. It's just they haven't asked him to. Hey, when you can just pick up 10-yard, 12-yard gain after 10-yard, 12-yard gain, that works. Usually you don't have a quarterback that can kind of consistently keep the offense on track, living off of that and not having the big plays. But that's why Drew Brees will be a first ballot Hall of Famer when he decides to hang the cleats up. Next matchup, we had the Broncos defeat the Dolphins 22-13. Not exactly the prettiest or most fun game to watch. Tua ended up getting benched in the second half. And, according to Coach Brian Flores, it was not because of injury. It was specifically because of performance. And it's hard to disagree with the guy. And before exiting, Tua was 11 for 20, 83 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks, but took 6 sacks, continued to not give us anything in terms of just rushing production. And I mean, even the touchdown, like it was a 3-yard score, Devontae Parker. Parker. Well thrown ball. I'm not taking anything away from that, but he threw a pick a couple plays before where like he was trying to get the ball over someone's head and just didn't. And then he got bailed out and it got nullified by a penalty. So, I mean, even the one really good throw he had on the day could have been called back. So I had a bunch of, you know, start sit questions about Tua this morning, and I picked against him every time, not to victory lap too hard on you guys. But the reasoning was just simple. We have not seen him trusted to throw the ball a lot. Even in these wins, he was 3-0 as a starter, hadn't thrown the ball more than 30 times. And while he is an athletic guy, you know, you know, maybe the Russell Wilson comparisons were off because we shouldn't be comparing anyone to Russell Wilson. But just in terms of that ability to kind of keep the play going with his mobility, you know, in the pocket, you can see the flashes and why people would say that. But it just hasn't consistently amounted to rushing yards. And that goes back to his days at Alabama. So Tua, you know, to his credit in this offense, you know, or Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, not exactly overflowing with guys that, you know, I think a bunch of offenses want to have out there throwing the ball to. So it just wasn't, you know, it's just not the most fantasy friendly mix for Tua. He was able to, you know, survive the last few weeks just kind of being a ball control dude with a great defense and a, you know, a good run game. But defense, you know, wasn't scoring for him in this game, and the run game wasn't doing the same thing that we've seen in past weeks either. So Tua, you know, is not going to be on the fantasy grid. Flores did say he will be starting next week, but again, we just do not have enough volume, not enough firepower, and not enough of a rushing floor to trust Tua as a realistic fantasy asset. And honestly, it goes for everyone else in this offense too. I mean, Devontae Parker, credit to him for making the most out of it. 6 catches, 61 yards, and a score. Mike Gesicki started to come on once Ryan Fitzpatrick came in the game, but, you know, Parker, I've had him as kind of like an upside wide receiver 3 with Tua under center. I'm not really going to be changing that after this performance. And elsewhere, it's just hard to get behind really anyone. Salvin Ahmed continued to lead the backfield, 6-7% snaps, 12 carries, and actually ended up getting 6 targets. So that was surprising to me because over these past 2 weeks, he only had 1 target in the 2 games combined. And with Matt Breida coming back, it would make sense. You know, if he was the guy featured on pass downs, that was not the case. So, you know, while Salvin Ahmed disappointed, you know, I think my decision for not really liking him that much this week was ended up being a little bit off because of the way Breida was just relegated to the number 3 back. I mean, even Patrick Laird played ahead of Matt Breida. So, hey, you know, maybe Breida was, you know, just slow coming off the hamstring injury. Salvin Ahmed in this offense still isn't someone that we should just be, you know, forcing into lineups. But with this sort of volume, he's going to be kind of on that RB2 borderline right there, you know, kind of nearby Duke Johnson just because of the pure volume. So, Miles Gaskin, he is eligible to return next week. We haven't gotten a clear timetable. Once he's back, we're done with Ahmed. But at least for week 12, and as long as Gaskin remains on the IR, again, volume-based RB2. Now with the Broncos. So Drew Lock, 18 for 30, 270 yards, like Cam Newton. That's a little bit inflated because he had a 61-yard completion to Tim Patrick at the end of the game where they did the thing where there were 4 seconds left and they just wanted to kill the 4 seconds. So, you know, you ask your quarterback to roll out and just chuck the ball downfield. Tim Patrick ran by his corner and Drew Lock put the ball on him. It was one of those things where you're very happy you stayed for the last play of the game because it was pretty funny to see and, you know, kind of help sort out that while Drew Lock, you know, hey, it was a good throw and, you know, we can't take that play away from him, but performance was a little bit deceiving from the total box score. So, hey, with Drew Lock, you know, he threw an ugly interception to open the game, but other than that, no sacks, he didn't fumble. I mean, he was facing a defense that we have seen defang, you know, some much better offenses than the Broncos. So the fact that Lock was able to play, you know, turnover-free football for 55 minutes of the game was pretty impressive. And, you know, he's just someone that a couple times in this one just shocked me with how mobile he was and able to get around the edge and even capture the corner a time or two. I mean, only 2 carries for 23 yards, but this is someone that's mobile enough to stretch the pocket. And I don't want to keep comparing everyone to Josh Allen because he's like the most unique player out there. But again, it's just that idea of when you have one of these quarterbacks that can move, that just has a massive arm, they can create problems for the defense. I mean, look at Justin Herbert and the things he's been able to do this year. So I think more and more in today's NFL, if we can get a quarterback that can at least move a little bit, I'm not saying they're guaranteed to be a better long-term quarterback, but I think just in terms of fantasy, we can at least project a wider range of outcomes and have a little bit more potential success with their teammates. So Drew Lock, still not someone we're going to, you know, be seeing on the fantasy grid anytime soon. But, you know, he's had now, I think, 11 starts. There's been ups and downs, but there have been some ups. So good stuff, you know, not all the time from Drew Lock, but, you know, we see the reason why so many in the Broncos organization remain high on him. I do hope they continue to go back to the well with him and kind of give him a chance to grow into something more. I'm not saying I'm, you know, necessarily believing in Drew Lock a ton, but I love the swag factor and I'm rooting for the guy because he does make, you know, these games more fun to watch. with this Broncos backfield. Melvin Gordon played 51% snaps, 15 carries, no targets. Phillip Lindsay, though, right there too, 43% snaps and 16 carries. Gordon had 84 yards, Lindsay had 82 yards. I mean, Lindsay's looked pretty good all season. Gordon, particularly the last 2 weeks, has been showing off some more explosion, and Gordon found the end zone twice. He did lose a fumble. I mean, he was close to scoring a third touchdown, but got stuffed at the one and lost the ball. They had to review it for a while, so could have been an even bigger game from Gordon. But I mean, this is, look, we've seen this Broncos team, the amount of games out there, they're going to be able to play with positive game script like this, few and far between. So Gordon's a league guy. He's going to be, you know, I don't even want to say lower end RB2. I'd say, higher end RB3, projected to lead the backfield in touches, but he's losing playing to Phillip Lindsay. And, you know, even though he didn't have any targets in this game. Yeah, Drew Lock does not like throwing to his running backs. And because of that, that hurts the floor of everyone involved. So Gordon, credit to him for finding the end zone. He's going to need to find the end zone to continue to provide anything resembling the sort of fantasy value. Mentioned Patrick's day, you know, being really boosted by that 61-yarder. He did tie with Judy for a team high 8 targets. Judy only had 3 catches for 37 yards. Had Noah Fant right there, 5 targets, 4 catches, 55 yards. Hamler down to 6 targets after back-to-back game with 10. Not having Cortland Sutton in the picture has helped, but still, as you can see, this is a crowded situation. I still think Judy, more weeks than not, will emerge as a number one, but, you know, pretty much anyone in either of these offenses, you know, he's going to have a low floor. So Judy, someone I'll probably have more in that wide receiver 3 range as opposed to the wide receiver 2. I've been hoping he could be over the past few weeks. This was a tough matchup against Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. Don't get it twisted, but still, just in this Broncos offense, we've seen the good and we've seen the bad, and we just can't, you know, always assume that we're going to be seeing the good weeks for one of these teams that, you know, is going to be out of playoff contention in all likelihood before too long. Next matchup, we got the Chargers defeating the Jets 34-28. Typical Chargers game in that, you know, it was just madness and you were kind of waiting to see how they were going to blow it. And it almost happened there at the end. But Justin Herbert just, you know, balling out. So many were concerned after he got the haircut that, it would take away his superpowers. But seemed to have, you know, more of a Remember the Titans sunshine effect. He got rid of the locks, came in focused. Maybe he was spending more time grinding film, less time, you know, on the old Tinder app and all that. Okay, I'll stop everyone. Sorry. But 366 yards, 3 touchdowns, did take 3 sacks, but no picks, and also chipped in 11 yards on the ground. Just more and more goodness from Justin Herbert. This guy's been balling all season long. And, you know, a Jets defense that it was pretty much like the same kind of strategy they did against the Chiefs hysterically a couple weeks ago. I mean, Kalen Ballage, you know, I guess they were just dead set on not letting him get his revenge game going because he only had 16 carries for 44 yards. But it's like, congrats, Jets. You stopped the run. You have, you know, pretty much forced Justin Herbert and company to throw the ball a week after they really didn't want to at all against the Dolphins defense that, you know, was pretty much inviting them to as well. So, hey, congrats, Jets. You've now forced Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert to, you know, just dissect your defense even more so than they were probably going to do anyway. So continue to fire up, you know, any and all fantasy options against the Jets with reckless abandon moving forward. Shout out to Keenan Allen, caught 16 of 19 targets, 145 yards in the score. The touchdown was absolutely beautiful from Herbert. He was rolling out to his left, and like the second he noticed Keenan Allen's defender looking the other way, Herbert just zinged that thing into like a 6-inch window for the score. So Keenan, he got some air yards on a couple targets, but ultimately his long was only 21. So hey, he's working the underneath intermediate areas of the field. He's great after the catch. The Chargers and Justin Herbert specifically fully realize he's the undisputed number one guy in this passing game. I mean, Keenan Allen's someone that I've obviously had, you know, high up in the wide receiver one ranks, but moving forward, man, it's going to be tough with these sort of target totals to keep him out of that top three even. So, you know, Keenan Allen, awesome season, awesome player. Great to see him and Herbert gelling in an offense that we just didn't know if they could even reach this point this season. Shout out to, I get Jalen Guyton and Tyron Johnson confused. They're both just these complimentary number 3, number 4 receivers, and usually one of them has a big gain. Shout out Tyron Johnson this week, had the 54-yarder. I did think it was Guyton. Neither of them are fancy assets, but just realize Herbert, you know, pretty much once per week hits one of these complimentary receivers for a 50-yarder, and it is fun to watch. Hunter Henry continued his end zone streak at 2 straight games now with a score of 48 yards. He's finally turning into this consistent tight end one that we hoped he could be in this offense. And then finally, my guy Mike Williams had a nice 39-yard touchdown catch on a slant and run. Not just a contested catch artist. I think Mike Williams is one of the most, you know, I'd say underrated, one of the most underrated receivers in the league. True top 10 talent coming out of Clemson. He can do it all. He is not, don't pigeonhole him as, one type of receiver. He's a red zone guy. He's just a big physical possession receiver. No, Mike Williams is a monster. He can do it all. And the fact that, he plays with Keenan Allen, hey, the Chargers have two number one wide receivers. And I'm not saying he's better than Keenan Allen. That's fine. I'll give that crown to Keenan any day of the week. But just because Mike Williams is the second best wide receiver on his team doesn't mean he wouldn't be the best on many other squads around the league. So Mike Williams, upside wide receiver three on a weekly basis in this budding offense. With these backfields, Kalen Ballage, 66% snaps, 16 carries, 8 targets. He caught 7 of them for 27 yards. So even though he didn't find the end zone this game like we were hoping, in the flawed point per reception scoring that I barked about on this podcast a few times, he still was able to be just fine. So with Austin Ekeler looking like he'll be back in week 13 at the earliest, I think Ballage is again going to be a volume-induced top 20 option at the position. Saw Tremaine Pope out there for a little bit this week, 90% snaps. Joshua Kelly, 14%. Neither of them are on the fantasy grid with the Jets. So LaMichael Perine suffered a knee injury, which kind of threw off the potential for him to get going. Either way, Frank Gore is going to remain involved. He had 56% snaps for 15 carries and 2 targets in this one. So both Gore and Perine found the end zone on pretty short rushes. But I mean, I don't want to hate on Frank Gore too much because it's not like Perine's been, it's not like an Antonio Gibson situation where, this guy's just been flashing again and again and again and they won't give him the ball. I mean, Perine's been fine. He's probably a better option than Frank Gore at this point in his career, but it's also a situation where I don't think, he's someone worth overly stashing for with this knee injury because we don't know if the role is going to come and we also don't even know if he can do much with it based on what we've seen. With these Jets receivers, Denzel Mims, 3 catches, 71 yards. Perryman, 2 catches, 54 yards and a score. When Flacco is under center, he likes throwing to these outside guys much more. Jamison Crowder, only 1 catch, 16 yards and 3 targets. We talked last week about, staying away from Crowder until Darnold's back under center. It sounds like that could be next week, but truly, Flacco, this dude likes throwing downfield. I love it. Hey, he's got that teardrop deep ball. He got a couple defensive pass interferences out there like always, and honestly, he's kept the Jets far more competitive than I think Darnold was, so they'll go back to Darnold, I'm sure, but, we cannot go back to Jamison Crowder until the Jets do go back to Sam Darnold. Finally, guys, it happened. Whole offseason on this podcast, I preached getting Chris Herndon. I let you down. There were a lot of wasted, 15, 16 round draft picks, and that is on me. I took that out in week 2 and told you to cut Chris Herndon. But we can celebrate the guy making some big plays. 2 catches, 32 yards, and a score on 3 targets. Both the catches were nice snags. You see the talent out there. You see the reason why I wasted so much time in those July, August months barking about this dude. So no, he's not a fancy option moving forward. I'm not trying to say that, and this is not a victory lap. I'm just saying, Chris Herndon, touchdown, nice. Root for players. No, don't worry about the teams. You can root for your favorite team, but we want players to do good. Be nice to them. They're amazing athletes. They're better than us at the game that we all love, football. Good stuff from Chris Herndon. PFF Lily matchup stat here. So Justin Herbert has thrown for at least 300 yards and or a counter for 3 total touchdowns in every game this season. Only 5 rookie QBs have earned a PFF grade of at least 80 since 2010. Robert Griffin, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Baker Mayfield, and currently Justin Herbert. Truly one of the best rookies we have seen at the quarterback position over the past decade, any way you want to look at it. 3 more matchups to go through, everyone. Thank you for sticking with me. As always, Colts 34, Packers 31. As someone that had, probably a little bit too much money on the Packers as an underdog, this one was particularly tilting because, they blew that 28-14 halftime lead. With that said, game probably shouldn't have been going to overtime if, not so many of those offensive holding penalties were called on the Colts. So it went both ways. I understand I might be a little more flawed with it, so I want to get that out of the way if my, kind of recollection of this game doesn't quite match what maybe some of you Colts fans saw out there. So anyway, Rodgers, played really well in the first half, 311 yards and 3 touchdowns total. He was getting Devontae going, had just a couple, again, just usual great Aaron Rodgers throws. I mean, even just in the second half, even after he was quiet in the third quarter for most of the fourth quarter, the pass he lofted down the middle of the field in between 3 guys to Marquez Valdes-Scantling to really start to get them in the field goal range. Absolutely spectacular. So, we saw the Colts come back and play hard. And again, going in this game, they were number one defense in the league and contested target percentage. So the only defense over 20%. So They're good. I've already said I was wrong calling them frauds, but we can also see that, you know, high-end passing games, they can put up numbers. Over 300 yards and three tutties for Aaron Rodgers. Davante Adams had 106 yards in his score. This offense, you know, easily could have won this game if MVS didn't, you know, fumble in overtime on a pretty weak, forced fumble attempt, I must say. But, you know, it is what it is. Packers lost this one, but, you know, Davante Adams, he's going to continue to be the overall wide receiver one. MVS more of a, you know, more of a boomer bust wide receiver five than ever, because, you know, it wouldn't be shocking to see them kind of, you know, penalize him for that late game fumble, particularly with Alan Lazard back in action, and even Equanimee and St. Brown having a nice 23-yard catch where he shows some solid yak ability. So it's Davante Adams since everyone else. MVS has looked like that guy that could give us, you know, the most of anything else throughout the season, but too many drops, too many mistakes. Would not be shocked if they start to look a different direction. We've seen them do this in the past. I'm not just speculating here. I mean, MVS has been someone that has kind of fallen in and out of favor of the coaching staff. I'd be very concerned about firing him up with any sort of confidence in week 12 and likely beyond. Shout out Robert Tonyan, catching all five of his targets for 44 yards and a score. Continues to look like the best tight end out there for the Packers. Unfortunately, you know, we got Mercedes Lewis getting a target, Jay Sternberger getting three. He's going to be, you know, a little more volatile than we'd hoped for, but inside this offense, clearly Rodgers likes him. Tonyan will continue to be, you know, a touchdown dependent, probably lower end tight end one, higher end tight end two moving forward. With the Colts, shout out Phillip Rivers, 288 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. Maybe I've just been a little biased. Rivers has no rushing floor. I know he doesn't have the arm strength, but he hasn't had the arm strength in years. Maybe I'm just a little bit biased towards these guys that, you know, on corking balls downfield and making, you know, better real life throws. Because Rivers, I mean, numbers are numbers. We don't care like how we get them in fantasy land, but it just seems like every single time this guy goes back, it's either, you know, a quick throw to a running back or a tight end the defense hasn't recognized yet, or it's a crosser to a wide receiver that is either open because the defense forgot about him or because, you know, it was a pick play. I'm hating a little bit here. I understand that, you know, Rivers had some real nice throws, one of which, I mean, just 23-yard flag route to T.Y. Hilton that was just dropped in a bucket. So his timing is as good as ever. He identifies the play. He is playing winning football, and that's why the Colts are 7-3. I guess the upside in these three passing touchdown games have been what has caught me by a little bit of surprise. And it's just so tough to have any sort of confidence in these guys getting the touchdowns. I mean, this year, only Marcus Johnson and Michael Pittman, who each have one, those have been the only instances of guys going over 75 receiving yards from this wide receiver unit. We saw that streak hold today. Nobody on the team had more than six targets. T.Y. was in the lead with six. Pittman had three. Zach Pascal had three. Trey Burton had five. Naeem Hines had four. Jonathan Taylor had four. So just continue to spread around. We see this every week. I don't think there's going to be a leader really emerge. I know Michael Pittman had the 45-yard touchdown. Look, I'm not trying to hate on Michael Pittman or anything. He could very well be a great wide receiver. I just haven't seen anything over these past 2 weeks to make us think that he can be, you know, this Justin Jefferson type, just true difference-making talent. Like, I want to see these guys, like Chase Claypool, like all these awesome, CeeDee Lamb. I want to see a situation where Michael Pittman has to either rely on, you know, contested catchability. He has to win against man coverage. He has to run a great route. He has to do anything other than what he's done the past 2 weeks, which is run a crosser, not be guarded by the defense, catch the ball, and then look, when he catches the ball with no one around him within 10 yards, he looks great. I think a lot of NFL players would look great in those situations, but credit to him for getting into those situations and picking up some yards. I mean, we got to put him on the fantasy map to some extent, but, you know, see him have three targets here. It's clear the Colts don't, you know, overwhelmingly think he's someone that needs to be, you know, full out featured ahead of everyone else. So we got that working against us. And again, like, if he was doing anything else here to give us, you know, just better, I guess, evidence that he was this, you know, super high-end talent, I'd be more willing to go to the well. But, you know, the guy's really the two just premier plays he's made over the past 2 weeks. The defense literally did not guard him on either occasion. So you can throw out the stat lines. I know they're good. And if he continues to just not be guarded on these plays because maybe Phillip Rivers is smart enough to, you know, set him up for these, hey, it's fantasy points. We'll take it how we can get it. But, you know, more so the reason why I'm not going to be on Pittman is because of how erratic this passing game has been all year long in terms of volume and also overall upside. I mean, look, they want to run the ball when they're able to do it. This was a game where they had to kind of play catch up for most of the second half. So, you know, I just think it's still, even with Rivers having some of these three touchdown games, because of how widely distributed the volume is, we're still going to want to be staying away from these receivers more games than not. quickly on the backfield. Jonathan Taylor led the way for the Colts. This was after a pregame report from Mr. Ian Rapoport from NFL Network. Look, Ian, it works very hard and he's very good with news. I would just say, you know, when you do see these Sunday morning reports from Rapoport specifically, just sometimes take them with a grain of salt. I would not overhaul your entire process. Again, we joke about the guy because he's got, you know, one of the biggest jobs and best jobs in all of sports and just, you know, the stuff and the, you know, ears he has and all that stuff. But I think sometimes when it comes to workload and analysis, just might not be getting, you know, the best information all the time. Schefter, we're going to trust, you know, almost everything he has to say, but just wrap again with some of these, you know, stories that might just sound a little bit better in front of a television camera for 45 seconds. Just realize might not be as rooted in stuff that, you know, important people have had to say. So anyway, Jonathan Taylor, 22 carries, 90 yards. It did seem like that Nyheim Hines did have the chance to be the guy, but that chance all like lasted one drive. He got the start, but 6 carries, 2 yards. I mean, Jordan Wilkins, 4 carries, 21 yards. Hines was still out there, you know, a good chunk of the game, 35%, but in a game that they were trailing, to see Jonathan Taylor take the lead, very good to see. Taylor also, you know, tying with Hines with 4 targets. He's been a capable pass down back all year, and that has been one of the pleasant surprises with Jonathan Taylor. Now, this Packers defense, we've seen, you know, running backs of all shapes and sizes go off against them over the past 2 years. Like, this is not, I think, a sign that Jonathan Taylor is going to just start balling out week in and week out here down the stretch, but it's good. This is a better game from Jonathan Taylor than we've seen in past weeks. We want him to have success, and hopefully, you know, build on it moving forward. But if you learned anything about this Colts backfield, whether it's been Wilkins, you know, Hines, Taylor, one guy has a big week, and after that, it goes right back into the three-back committee it's been all year. So anyone's idea of a true hot-hand approach, I'll continue to not treat any of these guys as top 24 options, but realize that, you know, if you need to go the well with someone as a, you know, low ceiling but somewhat okay floor because we can hope for 10-plus touches, that's, I think, the situation we want to go with these Colts running backs. Aaron Jones, 51% snaps. Jamal Williams, 49%. Yeah, it's annoying, but Aaron Jones, 10 carries, 4 targets. Jamal, 5 carries, 2 targets. He found the end zone on one of his targets. Jones found the end zone as a rusher. I don't know why they're split this close, and they continue to be. It's just a reality. Jamal Williams is good. He runs really hard. I mean, when he was starting, I think it was against the Texans, like first drive of the game, he gets his helmet knocked off, and he jumped up, and he was more hyped than the defender that just hit him. Like, I love the way the guy plays football, but you just look at the efficiency metrics, you know, ability to catch the ball. I think just overall influence on what the defense has to worry about. Aaron Jones, far and away, the better guy. But you know what? It's November. Packers are still 7-3. Hopefully they, you know, continue to just put more on Jones's plate as they get into more must-win games. He's still going to be a top 5, top 6, you know, fantasy back week in and week out, pretty much regardless of the matchup. PFF Lewis stat of the matchup. The Ravens and Colts are the league's only offenses that don't have even 2 instances of a player getting double-digit targets in a game this season. Once T.Y. Hilton had at least 10 targets in the game, that's it. So, hey, I know, it's a fairly arbitrary threshold. If you have 8 or 9 targets in a game, that's fine too. But again, it's been a spread-out offense, and it's been a run-first offense. Because of that, we just have not gotten hardly any instances of that sort of high-end fantasy volume, fantasy-friendly volume that we are always searching for. All right, everybody, 2 more games. Quick shout out to our sponsors of Monkey Knife Fight before then. All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 in their account while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's a $40 value for just $20, and you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest-growing fantasy sports sites in the USA, Monkey Knife Fight. So go to Monkey Knife Fight, deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. Good stuff from our friends at Monkey Knife Fight. Second to last game on the docket here. Cowboys beat the Vikings 31-28. Shocking game. And look, this was one where I had to do a little bit of radio during it, and it had some other games I was trying to watch as well. So excuse me if I kind of missed the boat a little bit, but it was weird to me because it seemed like the Vikings could really do whatever they wanted on offense throughout this game. Had some, you know, ill-timed turnovers and stuff like that, but just by and large, I mean, Kirk Cousins averaging 10.5 yards per attempt, Dalvin Cook 4.3. I mean, not, you know, the just blow-up game we were expecting from Dalvin Cook, but the offense was just moving up and down the field, you know, with no interceptions, only 2 sacks from Cousins. We just didn't really see, you know, the type of bonehead plays I would have thought would lead to a loss against the Cowboys. So, hey, give Andy Dalton, give this Cowboys defense that has been improving credit. It was just, you know, weird to me how the Cowboys, one of those games where you look at the scoreboard and it's like, oh, really, the Cowboys. Like they're still in this thing. So maybe that's just, you know, watching this team for the first 10 weeks of the season. Once that's kind of put in my head. But, you know, one is a win is a win for the Cowboys. They've now had three for this year and are squarely in the NFC East playoff race somehow. I mean, oh my gosh, man, we cannot wait to bet against whoever wins this godforsaken division at some point. Sticking with the Vikings though, yeah, Cousins, 314 yards, three touchdowns. He's been as efficient as ever this season. He just doesn't throw that often. So when we get these games, you know, he does make the most out of it. This is at the high end of his range of outcomes as a fantasy quarterback because there's never a rushing floor. And when we get other games where the Vikings are able to get a lead, you know, we do not see him even throw 30 times in a game. So, hey, he was great in this one. Adam Thielen, 8 catches for 123 yards and 2 scores. Justin Jefferson, 3 catches, 86 yards and a score. And we've talked about this all year. Even though it's a run-first offense in Minnesota, Cousins has consistently fed Thielen and Jefferson as his top two guys ever since Jefferson jumped into his starting lineup in week 3. And with Cousins having, I believe, the third highest average target depth in the entire league, these guys are getting fantasy friendly downfield shots, you know, unlike, you know, maybe Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp tandems of the world, you know, more of a less aggressive offense like that. So, you know, continue. Adam Thielen just keeps scoring touchdowns, had a league high 9 receiving touchdowns going in this game. Now he's at 11. He's going to continue to be that, you know, wide receiver one we had all season. And yeah, Justin Jefferson, incredible player. I just wrote a, I had a write-up on him on PFF.com last week, you know, calling him truly one of the league's best wide receivers, not best rookie wide receivers, one of the best wide receivers as always. Unfortunately, he just doesn't get the kind of high-end target volume that we wish would go with that sort of talent. So he's still been, you know, just awesome in terms of counting stats too. He's going to be a weekly upside wide receiver too. Just realize, you know, in matchups where he's not able to be quite as efficient as he was here, and we could even see that, you know, target number drop further. That's going to be, you know, the kind of bigger floor that we've also seen with Thielen, but I think just still, I mean, Thielen, even though it's 1A, 1B, and it's a close comparison between the two, Thielen still has been that 1A throughout the season. With Dalvin Cook, yeah, 80% snaps, 27 carries, 5 targets. Wasn't, again, the massive, because the freaking ceiling was the roof against the league's, you know, worst defense in yards before contact per carry. And I feel like anything under 300 yards would have been considered a disappointment for Dalvin Cook. So ultimately, I mean, 160 total yards and a score with those 5 catches. Anyone's idea of an awesome game, and he'll continue to be, I would say, the number one overall B next week and beyond with the sort of concerns we have with Kamara's target share with Taysom Hill under center. So more continued great stuff from Dalvin Cook. He did lose a fumble and he was banged up for a second, but it did seem like that was just, you know, probably more a wind getting knocked out of him than anything. With the Cowboys, Andy Dalton, 22 for 32, 203 yards, and 3 touchdowns with 1 pretty bad interception in between. So 1 touchdown to CeeDee Lamb, one of the catches of the year, the way this rookie just contorted his body, was able to snag it. So great catch there. 1 to Dalton Schultz, you know, a little bit closer to the goal line that ended up giving them the lead for good. And then Ezekiel Elliott on a screen when he was split out wide. So good stuff from the offense. I mean, you know, I've been kind of critical of the Cowboys offense, continuing to try to act like, you know, that just run kind of their usual system without Dak Prescott. Like, you don't have Dak Prescott now. Adjust the system to fit your players that you have. But even with that, you know, it was a situation where going to Ben DiNucci and Garrett Gilbert, it was tough to expect, you know, any sort of consistent play from this team. So getting Andy Dalton there, coming off the bye, I think we did see, you know, a better version of the Cowboys offense. Now, this Vikings defense, they've been playing better since their bye as well. But remember, this is a, you know, defense that didn't have anyone in the secondary that can hang with these guys. And we saw that again and again with Amari Cooper going for 6 catches, 81 yards, CeeDee Lamb, 34 yards, Michael Gallup, only 2 catches, 29 yards, but he had at least 2 drops among his 3 incompletions. So these wide receivers, these skill position guys, we know they're great. And I mean, look at the backfield too. Tony Pollard had a nice 42-yard touchdown. Cornerback made a business decision, but still, Tony Pollard, you know, you force someone to make a business decision against you, we got to give the running back a little bit of credit for that. And Ezekiel Elliott even, 21 carries, 103 yards. So Zeke is someone that, look, I understand you're making $90 million a year. Anything short of elite play, you're going to get, you know, hated on. But I would just say, you know, Tony Pollard is so good that I think we would be saying, you know, free Tony Pollard regardless of where he was playing throughout the league. So, hey, you know, maybe he would actually be a better option than Ezekiel Elliott as, you know, the Cowboys starting RB. But again, I think, you know, we're talking about truly, if we just threw all the running backs in the pool, I think you'd be surprised at how high Tony Pollard might be, you know, even compared to the rest of the guys around the league. So, hey, Cowboys have 2 really, really great running backs. Is it wild that they are paying one of them $90 million and the other one nowhere close to that? Absolutely. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Ezekiel Elliott, even if we think he's overpaid, is still anyone's idea of a very, 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 very good NFL running back. PFF Lilly matchup stat here. So 51 wide receivers have at least 50 targets this season. 3 have a PFF grade of at least 90. I'm sure you can guess, Devontae Adams. The other 2, Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. two of PFF's top three highest grade receivers this year. Both reside in Minnesota. Good stuff. They've helped, you know, Kirk Cousins helped enable them. They've helped enable Kirk Cousins. It's wild how good this Vikings offense has still been despite losing a talent like Stephon Diggs. And again, this is not like we can talk about Zeke and Pollard, both complimentary. We can talk about Stephon Diggs and Justin Jefferson, both complimentary. One great wide receiver left to go to Buffalo, and now the Vikings have another great wide receiver to replace him. Final matchup of the podcast, we have the Chiefs defeat the Raiders 35-31 Sunday night game that it looked like it was going to be Derek Carr's, you know, just great moment. We've been hyping him up, you know, on this podcast throughout the year because he's been playing great ball, and he had another great game tonight. But Mahomes and them, when they went down the fourth and they scored, got, you know, this ultimate memeable moment from Carr with just this pissed off look on the sideline. You can just see it. He goes downfield and scores, and we get this, you know, pissed off Derek Carr face meme thing. We could always go back to, well, all of a sudden he's just ice in his veins. Killer. And to his credit, he brought the Raiders down. He, you know, got him to the 1 yard line. Jason Witten had a false start, and then Carr goes back to Jason Witten from the 1 yard line, and he scores a touchdown to give him the lead. But too much time for Patrick Mahomes. He drove the Chiefs right down the field and ended up finding Travis Kelce for a game winning touchdown with under 30 seconds remaining. So again, truly an awesome game from Derek Carr. I mean, his only interception was on the final drive of the game where he just had to try to make anything happen. 275 yards, three touchdowns through the air, had a deep drop by Aguilar. He had the touchdown to Witten to finish off that drive, but, you know, Aguilar arguably made this just ridiculous one-handed catch in the end zone. The announcers didn't really talk about it all that much, but, you know, it seemed like something that could have been reviewed. It looked like the ball probably at the ground, but truly wild catch by Aguilar almost in a game where he had another drop or two, so it would have been wild to see that happen. But either way, drew a defensive pass interference. So, you know, Carr kept on deep. And, you know, I was telling you guys before this, since they got Henry Ruggs back in week five, I haven't checked the stat after this game, but I imagine it's still pretty close. Among like 39 qualified quarterbacks, Derek Carr was ninth in average target depth. So with Henry Ruggs this year, even though somehow Henry Ruggs had just one target in this game and it was a check down for 5 yards, I think just having him on the field and Nelson Aguilar to some extent has just, you know, helped get Carr to start throwing the ball downfield. As I so eloquently put it on Twitter, I must say, you know, Derek Carr learning this kind of mid-career improvement, finest mid-career improvement since Happy Gilmore learned how to putt back in the day. So yeah, good stuff there. I mean, Aguilar caught six balls, 88 yards, and had to score. Darren Waller caught all seven of his targets for 88 yards and a score. Darren Waller just such a beast. I mean, Collinsworth was talking about on the podcast, like, how fast he might run. He was projecting maybe under 4.4 seconds, a guy his size. That is absolutely scary stuff, everyone. So good stuff from this receiving room. Hunter Renfrow, 37 yards, and that's about it from there. Josh Jacobs has 17 carries, 55 yards, and a score. I took some of these snap counts in mid-fourth quarter, so we'll get the, you know, realistic ones on Monday. But 60% snaps, working ahead of Devontae Booker with Jalen Richard sideline with a chest injury. Yeah, you know, look, they give Jacobs usually 2-3 series, bring Booker in for one. Obviously, Jacobs is the league guy. He's the best running back on the Raiders. They continue to treat him as such. So not as much pass game work as we prefer, as always, you know, with Jacobs. And he's more than capable of doing it. And truly, he hurt his shoulder in the fourth quarter. He goes out for like a play, comes back in, picks up, you know, the blitzer coming up the middle and gives Carr time on a crucial third down to throw down the middle. So, you know, some of these running backs, man, they are a different breed when you guys just take that sort of physical down-to-down punishment and then go in, you know, on something like a pass down and stick your head in there with the blitzing linebacker trying to take your head off too. So, you know, another, you know, solid game from Jacobs. I know he only averaged 3.2 yards per carry, but just realize this dude, as tough as they come, playing his rookie year, you know, with that broken shoulder the whole way. Josh Jacobs, man, that dude is a stud. With the Chiefs, yeah, I mean, look, Patrick Mahomes, 348 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. It was harder for them than it probably should have been, just that we've been expecting it to be, because he's so good. You know, some of the cool things I've seen some of my much smarter colleagues and myself do, including PFF Moo, is just break down the idea that Mahomes, he still has, you know, peaks and valleys like anyone else, but Mahomes' valleys like are of an average game for most quarterbacks. Like even guys like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, they have a terrible game from time to time. You know, Rodgers versus the Buccaneers, Russell Wilson versus the Rams. Mahomes truly, I think in terms of it was like a total game EPA, like he just has not had a below average game his entire career. So this was like the best the Raiders could have hoped to catch Mahomes, and it just still was not enough. He chipped in 16 yards on the ground. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 14 carries, 69 yards, and two touchdowns while playing 53% of the offensive snaps. Was also in the scoring department. Le'Veon Bell was able to find the end zone towards the end of the game as well. So Look, offense goes through Mahomes. He's going to throw his heart's desire when he wants, and when he's going to do that, it's going to go through Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Tyreek had 11 catches, 102 yards in the score. Kelce, 8 catches, 127 yards in the score. Combined 24 targets. So we had a Byron Pringle get injured with an ankle injury. Mecole Hardman, you know, wasn't able to practice throughout most of the last 2 weeks due to COVID. So Demarcus Robinson was kind of the third featured guy. That would be Sammy Watkins if he can ever get back healthy. He's dealing with a calf injury in addition to the hamstring issue that kept him on injured reserve for so long. But yeah, just just realize that behind Kelce and Tyreek, it's gonna be tough to expect any sort of consistent involvement. But it was good to see Clyde, you know, really kind of pave his way out from Le'Veon's shadow in this one. He's not going to be that top five, top six guy we were hoping for, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire RB2 season could be on the horizon. Quick PFF Lilly matchup stat here. This one's hard for me to do because I pop into the podcast right after the game's over, so I don't have a ton of research. But going into Sunday night, this one kind of surprised me. Mahomes is one of just four QBs with 60% of their attempts targeting an open or wide open receiver as deemed by PFF. So, you know, we talked about this where he is a gunslinger in the sense that he knows that he can make any throw on the field, and we've seen him make pretty much any throw on the field. But the Chiefs offense is so smart, and Mahomes is so smart, and just Kelce and Hill, and the players are so talented. Mahomes doesn't even have to make these sort of tight window throws that we see him do from time to time, but just realize like there's a whole lot of easy yards being picked up in Kansas City as well, and that's what has made them the class of the league and so unfair over these past 2 years. That's going to do it, everybody. Thank you, as always, for listening to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Quick note about the schedule this week. I hope everyone has a happy holidays, you know, a great Thanksgiving. I know I will. It's, my opinion, the best holiday of the year, but just because I understand everyone's going to be, you know, with their families on Thanksgiving, we are not doing the usual guest episode that comes out on Thursday. So, you know, this one's, you'd listen to this on a Monday probably. You know, we still have our Tuesday episode, which is a breakdown of Monday Night Football and a look at some waiver wire stuff. We'll have the Wednesday episode with myself and Troy McFarland breaking down every game. And then we'll have a Friday episode that's going to be out around noon where I'm going to go through the Thanksgiving games and also look at some injuries ahead. So we'll still have 4 out of 5 normal podcasts, but I think everyone focusing on Thanksgiving and stuff doesn't make too much sense to try to, you know, bang down my producer's walls too much and I get that Thursday episode out. So I am doing some extra content to try to make up for it. I know, you know, if you haven't played Thanksgiving DFS, it is truly a great time. And you know, I'm going to come out with an article on Wednesday to help explain that. And I'm going to do a live stream on the PFF Instagram page on Thanksgiving morning about 11 a.m. For 30 minutes to help go through some of the, you know, better DFS plays with that. So still trying to keep you guys all happy with the content, but just, turning things back a little bit for the holidays. And then we'll be back to your regularly scheduled programming in week 13 and beyond. So thank you again, everybody. You know, can't stress enough how much I appreciate all the support and you guys all listening to this podcast. I'm Ian Hartis. You can find me on Twitter @iHartis, IHARTITZ. And until next time, take care, everybody.